recording. All right, now that we've fixed the microphone problem, we can have a nice class today. In our prior class, Sri Krishna was still talking about the Kuyogi, a so-called bad yogi. But bear in mind that a bad yogi is still a yogi. In fact, we make a distinction. We have a distinction between yogi and bhogi. A bhogi is one who is intent on gaining enjoyment in life. But this kuyogi was still intent on gaining enjoyment in life. What is the difference? The bhogi, one who seeks enjoyment, is one who finds enjoyment in the restaurant or the bar or movie theater, etc. But the kuyogi is one who still seeks enjoyment, but seeks it within. And specifically, seeks it within as wonderful, blissful experiences in meditation. That's why kuyogi. Instead of seeking Sri Krishna's presence within, instead of seeking the true self, Satchidananda Atma, the kuyogi is seeking enjoyment. That's why kuyogi. So you can see the similarity then between the bhogi, the seeker of worldly enjoyment, and the kuyogi, one who seeks, can we call it spiritual enjoyment? By the way, there's a lot of that going on today. Which actually, you'll be surprised when you see there are certain teachers who turn their celebrations into Bollywood extraordinary presentations. I actually like that because all the people who are attending it, and many are attending it, thank goodness they're attending it, something spiritual, and they're not doing other things which they can do. I view it as being helpful, but they're still like the kuyogi. They're still seeking enjoyment. Instead of seeking worldly enjoyment, now they're seeking meditative enjoyment. On the other hand, suppose this kuyogi had a good teacher. And allow me to repeat a comment I made before, and that is I find it very sad that so many sincere spiritual aspirants get misled by a teacher. A teacher who's well-intending, but a teacher who himself or herself doesn't have the correct understanding. So this kuyogi was probably taught to seek that meditative bliss within. So the kuyogi was probably doing exactly what his teacher told him to do, which is unfortunate. So now Sri Krishna talks about not the kuyogi, but a proper yogi who, not meditating on meditative blissful experiences, but rather seeks reality within. Or in the context of this Uddhava Gita, one who seeks Sri Krishna's presence within. We'll see that as we continue today. So basically then, the one who is enlightened. Okay, and with that introduction, we can pick up the thread. And then the verses are still in that longer meter. Yadisma pasyata sadat indriyartam. Yadisma pasyata sadindriyartam. Nananumanena virudhamanyata. Nananumanena virudhamanyata. Namanyate vastutaya manishi. Namanyate vastutaya manishi. Swapnam yathottayatirodhadhanam. Swapnam yathottayatirodhadhanam. Yadi, suppose, yadi sma, suppose this happens, where pasyati asat indriyartam, where pasyati, one sees, one experiences. One experiences what? Asad indriyartham. One experiences indriya artha, objects of the senses, which are asat. Now, this needs a little... Sanskrit has a way of being so expressive in just a few words, but then we have to unpack those words. First of all, indriyas are not five, but six. Your five senses, through which you know the world around you, number six is mind. So indriyas include the bahirindriyas, the external senses, and one antarindriya, antakarana, mind. So with our senses and mind, pashyati, one sees artham, objects, which are asat. Asat meaning not the true source of contentment and peace. So the bhogi is seeking it in the restaurant. The kuyogi is seeking it in the mind, right? So instead of the restaurant, seeking it in the mind. A true sadhaka doesn't seek in the restaurant or the mind, but seeks the true self within, not in the mind. Seeking it within, in the so-called heart. Sri Ramana Maharshi like to use that expression, seeking it within. But a properly taught yogi will do what? Will recognize that all those experiences that come through the senses and mind, all of them, virudham anyat, all of them are virudham negated in this context. All of them get negated as not being the true source of contentment and peace, not being the ultimate goal sought by the ancient rishis. Why? Nana anumanena. Anumanena, by reasoning, and in particular, a reasoning about the nanatva, literally the manyness of those experiences. Manyness, I maybe be better to translate as variability of those experiences. Let me explain. You go to the restaurant. This may have happened to you. You go to your favorite restaurant and order your favorite dish, and the waitress says, "I'm sorry, we don't have that today." You were really looking forward to that, but it's not always available. So that's the problem of the external search of the bhogi. What about our ku-yogi, looking within? Tell me, if you have a splitting head, if our ku-yogi has a splitting headache, do you think he's going to have a wonderful meditative experience and discover bliss in his mind? Not likely. So to seek happiness and contentment in the restaurant, nice American expression, hit or miss. And it's the same seeking happiness and contentment in the mind, hit or miss. Why? You can't count on it. You can easily compare it to seeking Atma, which is eternal, unchanging, your essential nature, a fundamental reality that is the opposite, doesn't come and go. It is being unchanging, is certainly not hit or miss. Therefore, in the third line, end, manishi, a wise person, an enlightened person, na manyate, does not consider all of those experiences. And remember, both categories, the experiences outside in the world, like the restaurant, or the experiences in your mind, same. And you'll see that in the last line. The wise person, na manyate, does not consider all those experiences, vastutaya, as being real. Now, here we need to remember our Vedantic definition of real. Do you remember? We've defined it a number of times here. real means that which was, that which is, that which will be, that which is not hit or miss, that which is eternally abiding, referring then to a fundamental reality, not a transient worldly reality. So whatever enjoyment you get outside or in the mind are transient. So for that reason, Manishi, a wise person, does not consider those kinds of experiences as being real. They're transient. By the way, if we're seeking happiness and contentment, are you seeking transient happiness and contentment or abiding happiness and contentment? Obvious. Okay. So he gives an example here. Sri Krishna says, yatha, yatha swapnam, just like a dream. Suppose you go to your favorite restaurant in your dream. And you order your favorite dish, and a waiter is bringing the favorite dish to your table, puts it down, and you're looking at it, it looks wonderful, and then you wake up. Uttaya. So you wake up from a dream, tirodadhanam, and everything that you enjoyed in the dream goes away, transient. So things in a dream are transient, things in a restaurant are transient, things in your mind transient. No abiding contentment is available in any of those ways. Then, where am I here? Then, purvam grahitvam guna karma chitram. Purvam grihitam guna karma chitram ajnanam atmanya vivictam avivictam anga atmanya vivictam anga vivartate tat punariksya yaiva nitate tat punariksha yaiva na grihyate napi visrijya atma na grihyate napi visrijya atma. Purvam, before enlightenment. And if you look in the middle of the third line, you'll see punar in the middle, after enlightenment. So let's start with before enlightenment. Purvam, previously. Guna, karma, chitram, varieties of gunas, qualities, and karma, actions, are grahitam, are taken, are accepted, are grahitam, taken, atmani, in the middle of the third line, atmani, are taken as one's own. Guna, qualities and karma, actions, are atmani, middle of the second line, are taken as one's own, avivictam, as being non-separate from oneself, anga. Kind of, by the way, things like this are thrown in to finish the meter. Anga means, oh dear one. Sri Krishna addresses Uddhava, and it has no other purpose here except to make the meter work out. It has to be 11 syllables and a certain pattern of short and long. Anyway, Anga, oh dear one, these gunas, guna, let's be more specific, guna means quality of the mind, and karma means activities of the body. So the qualities of the mind, happy, sad, agitated, content, whatever that is, and the actions of the body, running around to the restaurant and everywhere else, all of these qualities of the mind and activities of the body are atmani, are superimposed on your true self as being avivictam, as being non-separate, as being you. You don't, who would say, my body and mind went to the restaurant. No, no one would ever say that. I went to the restaurant. But you know enough Vedanta to understand that the true meaning of I is consciousness. Does consciousness go to a restaurant? There's an irony here, and that is consciousness being all-pervasive is already there in the restaurant. Doesn't need to go there. But if you want to enjoy your favorite meal, your body and mind need to coordinate things enough to get into a car and travel to that restaurant. So these are the guna and karma, the qualities of the body and mind, activities of the body, which are atmani, which are superimposed on your true self, ajnanam, due to ignorance. And ignorance has consequences. Ignorance has terrible consequences. Wars are fought because of ignorance. I forget, there's one American war, and I don't remember any of the details, but one of the wars fought by America was done because a message didn't come in time. Look it up. Absurd, right? So wars take place due to ignorance, and the Vedanta takes it a huge step further and says suffering takes place due to ignorance, but not an ignorance in general, but ignorance in the form of superimposition. Sorry, this is a fancy English word. The Sanskrit word actually seems more simple, adhyasa. Adhyasa, three syllables, versus superimposition, six, proving that Sanskrit is simpler than English. You wish. Okay, in this case, adhyasa is a very simple word. Superimposition has a lot of syllables, but it's such an important Vedantic teaching. It shows how when we superimpose one thing on another, we create suffering, and Vedanta's favorite example of that, as you all know already, is the rope snake. Tell me, are ropes dangerous? So being dangerous is a guna, is a quality of the snake. Do ropes bite? No. So biting is a karma, so guna karma, we saw that in the first line. Biting is an action of the snake. But you superimpose falsely the dangerous nature and the biting of a snake. It's superimposed on the rope, and the rope becomes a source of suffering for you. This is Vedanta. When you remove the ignorance, that suffering goes away. And that's what he says in the second half. He says, nivartate tat punaha ichaya heva. Punaha, after enlightenment, tat nivartate, that superimposition of the qualities of your mind and the actions of your body, the superimposition of all that on atma, nivartate, is removed. How? Ikshaya eva, through proper discernment alone. And that's really, really important. Tell me, if when you see the rope snake, what should you do to remove its dangerous quality? What should you do to prevent it from biting you? Silly, right? The only way to handle that rope snake is to understand it's just a rope. Pure knowledge alone, ikshaya eva, Through correct understanding and discernment alone do you get freed from this problem of suffering. Now, Sri Krishna sticks in a little extra bit here at the end. He says, Nagrihyate napi visrajya atma. Tell me, when you get it that it's only a rope. Actually, let me take it a little differently. Before you get it that it's a rope, when you still think it's a snake, tell me, does the rope get affected by the sliminess of the snake? Huh? Not at all. How does that snake affect a rope? Not at all. And when a snake goes away, how does it affect the rope? Not at all. What happens to the rope in this whole process? Nothing. And that nothing is what happens to Atma when you get enlightened. Atma is your so-called divine nature. When you discover your true self, when you become enlightened, in quotation marks, what happens to your true self? Does Atma become divine, or is Atma eternally divine? And what we are engaged in is a process of removing the superimposition, adhyasa, on Atma. Just like you superimpose on the rope, we superimpose all this nonsense on Atma. Enlightenment, this is a strong statement, but it's accurate. Enlightenment is merely, that's deliberate, enlightenment is merely the removal of superimposition on Atma. That's absolutely correct. Enlightenment is merely, it's nothing, which means nothing happens to Atma. Before enlightenment, you are Satchidananda Atma. After enlightenment, you are Satchidananda Atma. Then what happened? What's the difference? For Atma, nothing at all. On the other hand, for the person sitting in your chair, that person becomes free from suffering. Before enlightenment, suffering. After enlightenment, freedom from suffering. So Sri Krishna points that out. He says, Atma na grihyate. Atma doesn't take on any qualities, any gunas. Atma being a fundamental reality, consciousness. Being a fundamental reality has no qualities. Napi visrijyate. Nor Atma doesn't take on any qualities. You can't get rid of any qualities. It's like the rope doesn't get slimy, nor do you have to remove its dangerous nature, right? In the same way. So, simply put, the problem doesn't belong to the rope. To whom does the problem belong? You. In the same way, the problem of samsara, worldly suffering, doesn't belong to Atma. It belongs to you. All right. Then, an example that describes this very nice, simple example. Yatha hi bhanor udayo nrachakshusham. Yatha hi bhanor udayo nrachakshusham. Tamo vihanyanatus sadvidhatte. Tamo nihanyanatu sadvidhatte evam samiksha nipuna sati me evam samiksha nipuna sati me hanyatthamishram purushasya buddhehe hanyas excuse me, very common example given, yatahi bhanoho udayaha, bhanu, one of the many words for sun, bhanoho udaya, the rise of the sun, yata, just as the sunrise, nri chakshusham, for the eyes of a person, so for a person who is watching the sun rise, for that person, when the sun rises, nihanyat, it removes tamas. Because it removes tamas, here tamas means darkness. Natu sad vidhate. The removal of darkness doesn't create anything new. Sad vidhate doesn't create anything, doesn't do anything. The removal of darkness, tell me, did the sun start shining when it came up? The sun was shining before it came up. The sun always shines. We know that the earth is turned in such a direction where you can't see the sun. You look up and all you see is darkness. When that darkness is removed because of the earth's rotation, you see the sun that has always been shining. You see the metaphor? Pretty obvious, right? And that's what he says in the second line. Evam, in exactly the same way, last line, hanyat, when you destroy tamisram, the darkness of ignorance, purushasya buddhehe, in the mind of a person, when you remove the ignorance in the mind of a person, the darkness of ignorance, and this is a clear reference to that so-called veil of ignorance. That veil of ignorance means that Atma is already present within, here and now, but unrecognized because it is as though hidden. And then we use this common metaphor. It's like present but hidden by a veil. So the presence of Atma is hidden by the so-called veil of ignorance. When you remove that veil of ignorance, hanyat, when it's removed, then what? Evam samiksha. In the same way, then you get samiksha knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge which is, first of all, knowledge, we'll make that first. Knowledge of, Sri Krishna says, knowledge of me, me. So, who's teaching this text? Is Sri Krishna. You know, if we were reading Shiva Purana, Lord Shiva would say the same thing. That is, so Sri Krishna says here, when you remove the veil of ignorance, you see me. In the Shiva Purana, the text would say, when you remove the veil of ignorance, Shiva speaking, then you see me. And if you ask, well, who is it that you see? Is it Shiva or Sri Krishna? If you asked a question, you didn't get it, right? That's the difference between Shiva Purana and Bhagavata Purana. So we need to understand context. So Sri Krishna here is presented as that fundamental reality, the fundamental reality within your true essential nature as consciousness. Satchidananda Atma. So when the so-called veil of ignorance is removed, samiksha, then you gain understanding. What kind of understanding? Nipuna, correct understanding. Sati is present. Correct understanding is present by removing the veil of ignorance. When you get it, that it's a rope, does it take any additional effort to remove the snake? No. When you get the rope, the removal of the snake is simultaneous, right? Like two sides of a coin, they say. There are two aspects of one discovery. So the discovery that it is just a snake, I hope not. It is just a rope. That's all you need. There's no second step. And that's what Sri Krishna is describing here, that samiksha, self-discovery, discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, or Sri Krishna would say, discovery of my presence within you as your essential nature. That discovery is nipuna. It is sufficient and complete. Nothing further is required. You don't see at. You don't discover your true self partially. Tell me, when you look in a mirror, do you see yourself, or do you see only a portion of your body? This is very interesting. You may, your eyes pick up only a portion of your body. Allow me to have fun with this. I like this. Suppose you see your head reflected in a mirror. Does it mean you don't have a body? From the presence of the head you see in the mirror, you know you also have a body because they come together. You don't have a separate head and body. In the same way, when you discover Atma, that discovery is full and complete. Nothing is left out. No further step is required. Sri Krishna himself describes what you discover in this next verse, and I think we'll conclude with that verse. Let's see that. Esha swayam jyotira jo prameyo. Esha swayam jyotira jo prameyo. Mahanubhuti sakalanubhutihi. Mahanubhuti sakalanubhutihi. Eko dvitiyo vachasam virame. Eko dvitiyo vachasam virame. Yene shita vagasavascharanti. Yena shita vagasavascharanti. Nice way to conclude this topic. Eshaha, what is it that you discover? What is it? As we said, it's not that you remove the snake and then see the rope. So I guess what I'm pointing out is something a little subtle. You don't have to worry about this, but if you are very fussy about Vedanta, there's no veil of ignorance. It's a metaphor. Inside your head, do you think there's a veil someplace? It's a metaphor. There's no veil of ignorance. So notice in our conventional language, you remove the veil of ignorance and discover your true self, except veil of ignorance is a metaphor. There's no veil of ignorance to remove. We use metaphors as stepping stones to reality. If you were to say, well, wait a minute, is Vedanta telling us a little lie when it says there's a veil of ignorance? Vedanta does that all the time. It's how Vedanta works. It leads you from one state of ignorance to a state which is a little less ignorant, to a state which is a little less ignorant, to a state which is a little less ignorant. You may have heard me describe it as stepping stones across a river. That's how Vedanta works. So, first Vedanta says there's a veil of ignorance covering Atma. Then in the next paragraph, Vedanta says, there's no veil of ignorance covering Atma. And that turns out to be important because how can you cover Atma? Does that make any sense? How do you cover the rope? Huh? Metaphor. The rope is figuratively covered or obscured by ignorance. Atma is figuratively covered by a veil of ignorance. So let's not mix up metaphor and the reality. In our Vedanta class, we've been talking about mind reflecting consciousness. Those of you who have studied Vedanta, you know that's a common expression. The mind reflects consciousness. In that class, I keep asking them, is your mind shiny? Does it reflect like a mirror? It's shiny? Metaphor once again. So that veil of ignorance is metaphoric. To discover Atma, it's like discovering the rope. You just see. It's a rope. In the same way, I am pure consciousness, unborn, uncreated, and utterly unaffected by the conditions of my body, my mind, and the world around me. That is self-knowledge, self-recognition. And Sri Krishna describes that in a very simple, lovely way. He says that consciousness, what you discover within, which Sri Krishna says is me, you discover within, that me, that Lord Krishna you discover within, let's be very clear, the Lord Krishna you discover within is not like the deity on an altar. No form. No form. And that's what he describes it here so vividly. That self within, that Sri Krishna within, is Swayam Jyotihi. It is self-shining, meaning you don't have to pay attention to it. This is a little bit of an aside, but maybe it's worth pointing out. Many people think that to be enlightened, you have to pay attention to your true self all the time. I am Satchitananda Atma, and I can't forget that. So you're on the phone, and it's a complicated topic. Wait just a minute. You put the phone aside. I have to remember, I am Satchitananda, I am Satchitananda. And then you pick up the phone again. You don't have to pay attention because it's always there as your own consciousness, your own awareness. You don't need to pay attention to your awareness. Awareness is Swayam Jyotihi, self-shining, further ajaha, unborn. As we said before, your true nature didn't become divine. It was divine before. It was divine before your conception, before this birth, before the prior birth, before the prior one, after this one, after the next one, ajaha, unborn, a fundamental reality which is aprameyaha, immeasurable. A good application of that word is, in how many births did Atma dwell before this one? In how many bodies did Atma dwell before this one? What is Sri Krishna saying here? Aprameyaha, immeasurable. You have had an infinite number of prior births, and I'm in a mood for bad jokes. Not good. Here's the bad joke. You have had an infinite number of prior births, and if you don't keep coming to class, you're going to have an infinite number of bad joke. Bad joke. Okay. Aprameyaha, Atma, immeasurable. Maha anubhutihi. It's not some kind of experience stuck inside your head, all pervasive. maha anubhuti. In fact, in the very next word, he says sakala anubhutihi, the consciousness of all. Sakala means all, like sarva. So put it like this. The consciousness because of which I see you, and the consciousness because of which you see me, are one and the same consciousness. You've heard that before. One all-pervasive consciousness made manifest in you, made manifest in me. Therefore, the same awareness looking through your eyes, the same awareness looking through my eyes. Sakala anubhutihi. And just to illustrate what we just said, ekaha, it is one. One and the same consciousness reveals what's happening in your mind. That same consciousness reveals what's happening in my mind. Everyone asks the question at this point, why don't I know your thoughts? And the answer is not very hard to figure out, and that is, who's asking the question? Is that question Atma's question, or does that question come from your mind? Your mind is separate from my mind. The question in your mind is, why don't I know what's happening in your mind? And that question comes from your mind, which is stuck inside your body. I don't know what you're thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking, which, by the way, is usually a good thing, right? Think about it, what it would be like. Okay, that consciousness is ekaha. It is one. Advitiyaha. There's no second. There's no second consciousness out there. And it is vachasam virame. There's several ways of taking this. We'll just stay with the simple meaning here. It is vachasam virame. It is, I want to change my translation here. That which remains in the absence of words. So I have here beyond words, but now I'm refining that translation a little bit. That which remains when your mind falls silent. That's it. How lovely. I like that. That teaching comes very often in our scriptures. That which remains when your mind falls silent, and it is yena, that because of which vak, words, and asu is a word for prana, life, breath, asu. Asavaha is plural here. The prana that enlivens you. So words and the prana that enlivens you, charanti, they function. Why? Yena ishita. Being not prompted, being illumined by that consciousness. Consciousness fills us. The simple way of putting it is consciousness gives us sentiency. We are filled with sentiency. When our whole body, isn't it interesting? You touch your body in any location, you feel that. The sentiency pervades our body. Of course, if you fall asleep on your arm, it's temporarily numb, but then that sensation comes back. So your body is pervaded by consciousness. The sentiency of the body, function of the mind is all due to that consciousness. Or if Sri Krishna were giving this class, Sri Krishna would say, the sentiency of your body and the function of your mind are due to me, Sri Krishna would say. Because that's, he has a right to say that, after all. And that, I think, is a very good place to conclude our class today. Very good. Oh, we get a new topic. Very, very important. I'll introduce it properly next week. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Vedanta class at 10 o'clock, Shankaracharya's text. And at 11, immediately after, satsanga, come with your questions, come join us. We'll conclude with our prayers at the altar. Om Ganana Hantwa Ganapatigam Vamahe Kavinga Vinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanas Patahanashranvan Utivisirasaranam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Hatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Amritangamaya Om Shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.